Buying tickets can be complicated and confusing, but there is a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event. Whether you are searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out with friends, or just need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There is nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. We have the SeatGeek app on our respective phones, and it is by far the easiest way we have found to shop for tickets. In fact, we can be anywhere with just a few taps, instantly find seats. Tristan actually just used SeatGeek to buy tickets to a game that we met up at recently, and we ate well. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. It saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And to get you the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Plus, every purchase, it's fully guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater. And best of all, listeners to this fine show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code FFB today. That's promo code FFB for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
I haven't worked in a while, but I am back.
So, welcome back.
You want to sing that?
I can't sing that one with any content.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Tuesday morning, May 29th, 2018. A special Tuesday edition for a very special boy. I am Eric. He is Tristan. Today is Tristan's 29th birthday yet again.
And for that, 25th. Oh, I lost count.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. The jovial singer of the show will have to listen to us regale him today. And doing that will be top-notch researcher Kyle Soppe. Today's editorial watchdog is Tom Carpenter. And producing today and looking for the happy birthday song is Anthony Calatayud. We'll do that a little bit later on today. But a long weekend of baseball. Some interesting news happened. I haven't worked in a while, but I am back. So,
welcome back.
You want to sing that?
I can't sing that one with any justice.
There's
today,
so much information here. So much to get to. Let's just get right to the buzz. All right, we got stories big and small. I think we start with Ronald Acuna Jr., the Atlanta Braves outfielder who headed to the DL. And it could have been a lot worse than this, Tristan. I saw this happen on Sunday, and I thought, that is it. That knee, the way it buckled inward, it was scary. It reminded me of the Bryce Harper bone bruise from last season.
Yep.
And I'm trying
and
to remember.
And Adam Eaton, too.
And Adam Eaton. How much time did Harper miss last year?
I think it was 6 weeks.
Yeah, I thought for sure Acuna was going to be out for a long time. They're calling it a mild AC strain, lower back contusion, probably from the fall. But he was running yesterday, according to Braves reporters. So it's a 10-day DL stint, and he might be back next weekend, which I find amazing. Your thoughts?
It's hard to believe, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty quick.
It is pretty quick, but that's 10 days. And look, the kid is 20. And, you know, 9 years ago when you were 20 and 10 for me, I never, you know, who listened to anybody? You know, if you're 20 years old, you do what you want to do. Braves had a DL, and it seemed like the right move, even though he said he was ready. What are your thoughts on Acuna after 29 games and this injury? Do you think it'll affect him long term? Do you think an emergence into a statistical superstar is pending? What are your thoughts?
Well, first, I don't listen to anybody now. I mean, come on.
You don't listen to me on this show, that's for sure.
I think you asked about Acuna, though, so I'm going to guess and go with that. So, you know, the only thing that really gets me about injuries like this when they're severe, I mean, it was very promising to see that he walked off. I mean, he limped off the field as opposed to having to be carted off or the like, is whether the players gain the confidence to come back at full strength after their recovery. And that's such a minor thing, I think, in this case, where we'll get a read on it in the first couple of games. If he comes back in 10 days, that's an extraordinary recovery, extraordinary circumstance. And I do think he is a budding superstar. I hope for our sakes, fantasy-wise, baseball-wise, for fans, that he is back in the 10 days. And I'm really not downgrading him much in my ranks. You?
No, I'm not. You know, you got to move him a little bit. I mean, the numbers so far, they don't scare me. You know, he's not really striking out at a massive rate. He's the speed is obvious. I've seen a lot of him because the Braves and the Phillies play every week. He looks fine to me. Even in this Boston series, I mean, on the play he got hurt on, it was an infield single. His speed is fantastic. So his BABIP should be higher than the normal range in a general sense. I still see a 2020 guy, and I don't think this really derails him. You know, you'd say, well, his knee was hurt. Maybe he won't steal bases if he comes back on June 8th. Well, maybe he will. Like, I don't think we can learn anything from this, frankly.
That's the thing. We're going to learn that overnight when he comes back. I mean, he could come back in game one. He gets on base, attempts to steal, and then all the doubts go away. And my hope is that's what happens.
As I wrote today, I would not be cutting this guy. He's already down to 90% rostered in ESPN leagues. I think it's a mistake to start cutting him. He's not high on the most drop list, but he's going to get there probably by the weekend. If you want to drop him for the likes of Austin Meadows and Tyler O'Neill, I think it's a mistake because those rookies, I don't think, will be playing regularly in the month. Austin Meadows is doing far too well based on what he showed in the minors, especially with power. Tyler O'Neill, that's a numbers game. When Dexter Fowler starts hitting, and it's a good time, I think, to invest in Fowler, hitting 160.
I like they say win instead of if. The way that Fowler's been playing this year, I do think that if is a valid question for him. But to your point, I'm in agreement. I don't see the path for regular bets, and I hate doing the whole path to playing time thing, but Starling Marte, active again.
Yeah, and hitting.
Yeah, and that was the guy that Meadows was going to fill in for. They are talking about a little bit of an outfield rotation there. So, yeah, it's possible that Meadows is going to start three out of every four games, especially if he keeps hitting like this. But there isn't an everyday place for him to play right now.
Well, sell on Corey Dickerson. Anyway,
yeah,
even
I
if
know,
he wasn't going to be sharing playing time. Anyway, Acuña Jr. is going to be fine, and we're all pretty lucky because that looked bad.
Yes, it did. And that's why I think people are cutting him, is that when they saw that, they thought, it's not just a DL stint.
All right.
It's a long DL stint.
Moving on, this is not a DL stint. It's a DFA stint. Hanley Ramirez of the Boston Red Sox is going to going to end up on another team soon. I don't know where it's going to be, but Boston gave up on him, which is really weird, Tristan, because he was batting third, and then the next day he was cut. Yeah. Which I've never seen before. I mean, it's one thing if he's on the bench, and, you know, we'll get to the Mitch Moreland discussion, but Hanley Ramirez, if you've got him in a 12-team standard league, I don't think you need to roster him anyway. He wasn't hitting in May. But in a deeper league, an AL only, or in an NL where you can take a shot on him in case he ends up there, which I doubt, right? I mean, he can't play first base, can't play anywhere in the field. What do you do if you've got Hanley in a deep league?
I think you keep him around because most of those are going to have the luxury of enough bench space, or the quality out there on the free agent list isn't good enough in order to let him go. Most of the questions I've gotten about Hanley over the weekend are coming from people who are in the shallow mix. And the problem with Hanley is I think he was DFA'd solely because of the vesting option, which means he's going to have to clear waivers for them, which means it's going to be 10 days, which means we're looking at June 3rd. And then after that, he's going to have to find a team in which to go to afterwards. And if you look at the options, Eric, I don't know if you've looked at these other candidates for teams, there isn't an obvious place for him to play. The first one I think everybody's going to think of is Colorado, play first base for the Rockies. But to your point about defensive first base, not good enough to do it. Could he be a platoon man in Cleveland or Minnesota? I think we're going to be waiting a good amount of time, and I don't think he's going to be a relevant player except in those AL onlys and, let's say, 16-plus team mixed.
Tristan, I assure you that I am constantly checking on interest in Hanley Ramirez to see who ends up with him because it's very important to me.
I'm sure it is.
Mitch Moreland, he can't do this for long, right? I mean, why is Mitch Moreland all of a sudden hitting well over 300 with this much power? He's a fine player. He's like the kind of first baseman you pick up for a week or two when your guy's on the DL, and then you send him packing again, and you think, oh, no big deal. It's not like he's going to hit 320 with 30 home runs. But is Mitch Moreland going to hit 320 with 30 home runs?
I don't think so, but I think the power certainly is. I think that's in the conversation. It's the batting average that I doubt. I mean, BABIP's way up for him. I could check the whole quality of contact thing to see if maybe there's something there. I mean, to me, it's slightly up this season, but not enough that I think he can sustain this batting average. This is the guy that I think every year is your consistent 270 or maybe it's 260 and 20-25 home runs, and I don't think there's anything more there.
But because of what Logan Morrison and Justin Smoke did last season, any time a first baseman plays over his head, we start to think that they're going to do that. They're going to hit 38 home runs.
But why first baseman? What is it about that position,
though? Because it's not any other position that's doing it. I find that it's guys like that at first base because it's the one position in fantasy that everybody's got one. You know, it's like nobody really needs a first baseman. And so we see these guys that did this last year and we think, oh, well, you know, here who's next? But if you ask me, Mitch Moreland versus, like, Greg Bird, like, who would you take?
Bird.
I kind of would, too. If you ask me, Moreland versus Matt Carpenter, who, by the way, has been great in the last week or two, mm-hmm. I would take Carpenter. Say Mitch Moreland versus, I guess we're playing a name game, versus Jesus Aguilar. I forgot. See, I don't remember how to do this show. I've been off for so long. Jesus Aguilar of the Brewers. I mean, I think he's going to keep playing because he keeps hitting, and he's hitting right-handed pitching. I would rather have Aguilar than Moreland.
I like Aguilar. I mean, the negative for him is just that he's the righty and what people assume is a platoon. But I've said many times he hits right-handed pitching.
Oh, yeah.
Moreland, you know, I'm not even I can't even make the Logan Morrison or Yonder Alonso claim
either.
For him.
Yeah.
I mean, and the reason why is just that there was something in the numbers for those two that said, yeah, there's more to this than just a little brief blip. And both of those guys did regress a little bit more towards the mean late last season. But Moreland, the only thing that's really changed for him is he's pulling more balls.
If the Rockies do that, I think I might get mad. They just,
I mean, that's
Ryan McMahon's playing second base. I mean, this is ridiculous.
But that's the thing. I mean, I think people are just trying to get excited about where he'll go for fantasy. And the truth is, I mean,
he's not good anymore. Hanley Ramirez is not good anymore. So
yeah.
I don't know why anybody cares where he ends up. He wasn't hitting for Boston. He was batting third, right ahead of J.D. Martinez, and he wasn't doing anything. He did something the first couple of weeks, and we got excited, foolishly, I admit. I was like, yeah, he's going to steal 15 bases. He's not going to steal any more bases.
The vesting option was always a problem, and here it is again. I mean, the guy's cold for a month. He was great in April. I think he's a part-time player for his new team, and I wonder who it is. I don't think it's going to be any of the three I mentioned there.
I don't either. Let's move on to some pitchers here, because returning this week, arguably the two best lefties other than, well, maybe including. Clayton Kershaw penciled the return on Thursday against my Phillies, and Madison Bumgarner eyeing his return later this week, also against the Phillies. The Phillies can't, you know. They can handle these guys. No big deal. Let me remind everybody out there what you do with players who've had a long-term DL stint. Pitchers, starting pitchers. Do you put them right away? Do you look at matchups? These guys have a name, obviously. It's not like, you know, when someone else comes up, like Herman Marquez, but what do you say?
It depends on the individual and the situation, but when you talk about talents at this tier, I start them right away. The main hesitation I would have for a player like this is workload. Are they going to be on a limited pitch count? So in Bumgarner's case, for example, they're already playing the hedging game with him. He threw 3 2/3 innings. They were outstanding, hitless, I believe they were, in fact, which is not going to get his pitch count up to the point where he's going to throw like the Madison Bumgarner we've known in the past. So I could see him ending up in a minor league rehab stint later this week instead of in the majors. If he's in the majors, I'll start him, but if I have a starts cap, I'm keeping on the sidelines. Clayton Kershaw, I think he is ready. They had planned this. This is something where he's ramping up to a near full, if not full, workload this outing. And, you know, I mean, these two are just ahead above everybody else. I'm not going to start Anthony DeSclafani in his first start off the DL unless it's against a great opponent, just because I think there's the workload question, and I want to see the effectiveness after so much time off.
He hasn't pitched since, like, the Bush administration. It's been a really long time for
exactly.
Anthony DeSclafani.
When it's a lengthy absence for a lower-tier guy, that's when you should have some hesitation. But for the premium names, I mean, you've got – Eric, I'm sure you're all in, too, right, with the
top-tier
guys.
Yeah, they're active right away. In fact, I already activated Kershaw in a weekly.
Yeah, you should.
And it's not like the Phillies hit that great.
They announced that's going to be a start, so you know you have them locked in.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe it's a 75 pitch count, I guess, but I think it's different for him than it is with DeSclafani.
How about Nathan Eovaldi?
No.
yeah, I'm a no, too. There's another guy like this who's coming back who I think is a good debate.
Who?
Mr. Alex Reyes.
Yeah, what do you do there? I mean, the strikeouts in the minors are unbelievable, but some of that was against, like, single-A guys. I mean, it wasn't exactly their triple-A the entire time. Mm-hmm. But Alex Reyes, we know, can be great. And his minor league numbers this season, 23 innings, 7 hits, nary a run, 7 walks, 44 strikeouts. And we always knew Alex Reyes was going to be great. We just had to wait a year because, you know, the elbow.
Right.
You activating him at Milwaukee on Wednesday?
Absolutely. Milwaukee is not the high K team that they were a year or 2 years ago. They've got some players in there who are more contact oriented, but the fact that he, and we brought this up on the Thursday show, that he had 9 straight Ks in a Pacific Coast League game said that I think there's enough swing and miss there in his raw stuff that I will go ahead and use him. But again, there could be a pitch count. He could be on a cap of 90.
And remember back in March where we were told basically by the Cardinals that he was going to go into a relief role.
Yeah.
We were like, I don't want him now. He's going to be a setup man.
Did you see what they said now about him?
Yeah, he's a starter, and there's no restrictions.
They said there's no cap.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Over the weekend, they said, not only did they say a week ago he's in the rotation, now they said there's no innings cap for Alex Reyes.
I would have been all in March if I thought he'd be back this soon and he'd go right to the rotation. I really thought, because they said it, I don't know why we believe teams when they talk, that he was going to be in their bullpen. And their bullpen needs him, too.
I will give a kudos to Derek Hardy for being on that. He was one guy I know who was all in from the start.
You Darvish versus Daniel Mengden. Who would you rather have the rest of the season? if awesome mustaches were a category in fantasy, I mean, that's easy. It's Mengden. I'm tired of Darvish. Obviously, we'd rather have Darvish, elite strikeout guy. Mengden is way overperforming on what he should be doing. Although his FIP is still really good, his main number is 1.07 ERA, 0.68 whip. Of course, he's being added in all leagues. And, you know, we know better, right? I mean, this can't last. He's not a strikeout guy. And Darvish is, but I'm tired of Darvish. I'm tired of, like, is he hurt? Is he not? Does he want to pitch? Does he need his catcher? He's walking everybody. He's not, like, quite to the degree of Tyler Chatwood walking everybody. Oh, he just walked another one.
Felt like a team.
You deserve that. You absolutely deserve that. You know how much money I wasted on him in one league because of
him? Like
why did I listen to you? Why?
I can't wait till he throws a gem and I just... We're having a podcast. Oh,
he's throwing gems. Every gem comes with six walks. The problem.
It does.
I could be really terrible and note that the guy who's debuting for the Indians on Thursday has 1/15 walks in AAA.
I'm so happy I've got him in a couple leagues. I took him in our 30-team dynasty, too. Shane Bieber of Cleveland.
He's 3 walks and 10 starts in the minors this year, and Tyler Chatwood has 40.
Did that in the first inning on Sunday night.
Yeah, overachiever.
Seriously now, what do you do with Darvish? What do you do with Mengden? Are you interested in Mengden at all? Do you trade for Darvish?
The instinct tells me, to trade for Darvish, but... you hear the hesitation here. You know what really bugs me is just that I said that I thought it was a command thing that could be fixed with some coaching. When you have a player who goes on the DL like this, it's not about trying to manipulate the schedule. There's obviously something afoot here, and I wonder a little bit about whether this is going to take some time before he gets back to his premium self. So top 30 is probably the line where I draw for him. I don't think he's a clear member of that group. Mengden, I'm trying to feverishly find out what the adjustment he made last year was. Let's see if I can get that. Last year, he had at least 7 shutout innings in 3 of his 5 starts in the month of September and showed great improvement in terms of control, which has carried over to the season. But as you said, he doesn't miss a lot of bats.
I don't know. It feels like I'm watching Doug Fister with a great mustache. And I've got Mengden in a league or two.
And he's not as ground ball oriented as Fister, so that is a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. If I rank Scooter Gennett in my top 50 today, what would you do? Would you call me crazy? Now let me just point this out.
A little bit.
He's going nuts in May. He bats behind Votto. The power looks legitimate to me. Okay, I mean, last 7 games, 15 hits, 3 home runs. This is a 30 home run guy who could bat 300. I know that sounds absolutely ridiculous. And that a grown man is named Scooter. But he's going to do something like this, Tristan, and we're not paying enough attention to Scooter Gennett.
We probably weren't last year either. I feel like the batting average is what I wouldn't get on board with. The problem is, I'm not going to completely condemn the top 50 thing here. The problem is, I think I could name 50 players at the top of my head I'd rather have than him.
But if I told you I'd rather have Scooter Gennett than Daniel Murphy, I don't think that's crazy, man.
No, that's not crazy.
I don't think that's at all crazy. Murphy's going to come back soon, and we're going to all be like, oh, he's awesome. Look at the hits. But he could go on the DL at any time, especially when I think Washington runs away with this division. The Phillies and Braves are going to fall out of this. And
Gennett grades very well in terms of the quality of contact and the type of it this year. He's made some key shifts.
Good.
It all
looks good, man. This looks like a 30 home run, legitimate. Maybe this is what Smoke and Morrison did last year, although Scooter did it last year. And then last guy here, Gleyber Torres. Mm. What do you think of him? Apparently, since my last appearance on this show, which really wasn't all that long ago, he's slugging .848 with 6 home runs. Is Torres a top 10 second baseman? I guess it depends on who else we name.
Yeah, can I name 10 to put a? I mean, I'd take Gennett over him.
Okay.
I think I could find 10 guys I put ahead of him, but I like both of these conversations. I like where we're going, and when we have this reaction, it means don't trade them regardless of what our ranking said. The Murphy comp is a great one here when you're talking about the value points because there's so much more risk involved with Murphy that I don't see with these other two players. Torres, my big criticism is I do think that the power rate is going to regress a little bit.
Like Didi? Ugly May. That's a bad month.
Didi's batting average, as we talked about previously on the show, is what has regressed.
Everything regressed.
Power is still there. That is what he is now.
Man, that May, I did not expect to see that. I mean, I'm going to have to drop him out of my top 100. This May is almost tells us more than his April. And by the way,
he's permanently a power guy.
If I put Justin Verlander as my number five starting pitcher, nobody would say anything.
Really? I would.
You wouldn't have him five? Look at the season he's having.
It's too low.
Where do you want to put him? One?
Four.
Over Kershaw.
I had him over Kershaw on my last set. Yeah, I'm with you on this.
Wow.
Yeah, he's top five. No question.
All right, everybody's hitting. Everybody's running. Here are the combo meals.
Hey, it's a combo meal.
All right, I'll just name him. If you have something to say, go for it. Mike Trout, who's awesome, only player with double-digit combo meals since the beginning of 16.
You know, 12. I hear he's good.
I've heard of him.
I was told that by some radio announcer in a game over the weekend.
If you've got Trout,
I think he's the best player in the league.
If you've got Trout, would you trade him for Mookie Betts, or would you keep Trout?
I'd keep Trout.
I would, too.
But those are the two guys that you're talking about, if you're moving either.
Friday was Mookie Betts and Nomar Mazara. Saturday, Aaron Judge, of course, and Jose Altuve, who had a nice weekend. Nobody did it on Sunday, and then on Monday, Christian Yelich and Gorkys Hernandez. I had Gorkys Hernandez in an NL-only last year, and he hit nary a home run, and he's already got six. Explain that. Can't do it.
How can you explain how that, the ex-Padre guy now with the White Sox had two home runs in back-to-back days? Jose Rondon.
Oh, right, okay. Don't pick up Gorkys Hernandez, right?
It's six home runs. I mean,
it's six home runs recently, and he's being added in leagues while Acuna is being dropped. Don't do it.
30% K rate, 423 BABIP.
We've been talking a lot here. I need to move it along. Here's the closer carousel.
The closer carousel.
All right, so last year's leader in saves in the American League got traded to a team where he's the setup guy, though he did have a save over the weekend, only because Seattle wins literally every day and Edwin Diaz was getting tired. Alex Colome, over-under on saves the rest of the year, three?
Under.
Yeah, I mean, just drop him. just drop him.
I mean, we've mentioned before that I did have the worries about whether Edwin Diaz would be able to have the durability here, but at this point in his career, I don't think we have any right to question.
Who gets the next? So Johnny Venner's got a save for Tampa, but it was an unconventional one.
It was
13 innings. The lefty was up. He struck him out. Do you think Tampa Bay does that lefty-righty stuff? And Sergio Romo and Jose Alvarado and who's the other guy in Tampa that I've
Chaz
seen?
Rowe.
Chaz Rowe. Who do you think is getting their saves this week?
I believe Chaz Rowe will have the most of any of these guys, but I think they will be straight matchups. I think Alvarado's the best arm of that bullpen.
I don't know if he's next in line. And Romo's been starting. He has four starts in the last 2 weeks, but I don't know. I don't know. The Colome trade should not affect that. If you want to keep using Romo to start games so your lefty Yarbrough doesn't start, I like it.
They finished out a win with, was that Banda's where he threw 6 1/3 to just finish out the game?
Yeah,
I mean, I could see them doing that.
There may not be a natural closer there. Ken Giles, nice outing over the weekend, but Monday was safer, cleaner. He's still their closer. Felipe Vasquez left the game with forearm strain. Says he's fine, no DL, was bad in that game. Man, I would prepare to be without Felipe Vasquez really soon. And I would add, is it Richard Rodriguez? Is it Edgar Santana? Who do you think's the Pittsburgh next in line?
Oh, it's a good question, because Michael Feliz had a couple of good outings here or there over the past few weeks. I think Richard Rodriguez is the one who's probably earned the opportunity here, but it's probably Santana based on the usage patterns lately. And I'm a Vasquez owner in the office league, as you've surely seen. He's my only source of saves, and I'm petrified.
I haven't seen him because I didn't look at your team.
Totally petrified. You were talking trades with me over the past week. You should have seen he was my only save.
We need more trades. I didn't look.
No, I am. I'm very scared of this injury.
Ooh, I have extra saves I could trade you.
I have like 14 outfielders now I could trade you for some apparent reason.
You need Fernando Rodney. You know what? I'm not going to give you the satisfaction of taking Fernando Rodney from me because you don't believe that he's going to get 30 saves, and I do, so he's much more valuable to me than you.
30 saves? That's a pretty low bar here.
A month ago, you said I was crazy for thinking he was going to get 30 saves.
I know, but...
But he's going
to. I know you believe he's going to get 40 saves.
I think he might. A look at Tuesday's schedule, there's a game at 6:10 p.m. Eastern time, so don't wait until 7 to make your daily roster moves or fill out your DFS stuff or whatever. But the last game of the day on ESPN Plus is Dan Straley and Tyson Ross. Moving on. I mean, you can't. You're not interested in this, are you? Would you use Tyson Ross though in a one day? Because obviously he's facing Miami at home in a pitcher's park.
Yeah, and that's the reason I'd use him. I mean, Tyson Ross has been a serviceable year.
I don't know if you've been paying attention because you all dropped him late in April, but Luis Castillo has had a terrific May. And he's pitching at Arizona on Tuesday, and they, you know, say what you want, whether it's the humidor or the lineup just isn't as good with that A.J. Pollock and Goldschmidt doing nothing. But Luis Castillo's had a really good May. Go get him again.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have dropped him in the first place.
You shouldn't have dropped him in the first place.
I didn't. I actually traded for him in a league.
We moved him down. I did move him down the ranks in that one week, and then I took a closer look, and he's about what he was last year as of today.
His fastball velo is still down, though, in May.
Yes.
So his May numbers might be a little too good. One more guy. Nick Kingham's back for Pittsburgh. I just traded him away in a league. But he's facing the Cubs at home. He might stick around because Ivan Nova's on the DL, but he might not stick around. I kind of view him the way I do Tyler O'Neill. It's nothing special, and we don't know if he's going to be on the roster for the next 4 months, but when he's here, he could do something.
I'd agree. This is one matchup I'm not wild about of his, though.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I mean, but I'm with you. I think that most of the time when he's called up, you're going to want to use him. This is just one I would avoid.
But he didn't have a pedigree as a top pitching prospect. This is not Walker Buehler. This is not right. Alex Reyes, people. So don't get too excited about Nick Kingham. He's a guy who should have an ERA of like 350 with a K rate of 7.5. Like, I don't look at Nick Kingham as a future star. Do you?
No. Command guy, which means he's going to be very much in the matchup's homework bin.
Wednesday, there's a game on ESPN at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Why is that? It's the Astros and the Yankees, so get there early. Dallas Keuchel and Luis Severino, two aces. I love that one. Alex Reyes will make his season debut, supposedly, at Milwaukee. It's a day game, so don't miss that one. Max Scherzer at Baltimore. That could be a no-hitter with that lineup.
and the Orioles have lots of Ks in that lineup, which plays even more.
It's Ohtani Day on Wednesday at Detroit. Now, that's clearly six innings, nine strikeouts, one run.
What happened to Sunday? They ruined it.
Look, if you ask me who – I wrote this before I went on vacation, like the MVPs of the season. I didn't have number one, but I have number two. I mean, what he – and he's actually more valuable as a hitter than a pitcher this season, Ohtani is, according to the player rater, in comparison with others.
Right.
He's not going to make 25 starts. So if you've got him as one of your aces, you're going to be missing starts like you do with Kershaw.
It's going to be a guy you love having in those daily leagues.
Oh, yeah.
And don't like having in weekly
But in
leagues.
A season-long league, like in a head-to-head – there's going to be a week or two or five that he just doesn't pitch that week.
Yeah, like last week when you started him and you got nothing from him as a pitcher. You probably started him as a pitcher and didn't get anything.
Later in the night, you can watch on ESPN Plus Fernando Romero, the nice Twins rookie against Brad Keller starting.
Yeah,
I didn't
stretching him out.
Is he stretched
limited pitch
out?
Count, though.
Yeah, I kind of liked him in a relief role. Sean Manaea is on the mound. Now, we sung his praises 4 weeks ago, and now he's getting lit every time since. Why?
It's a good question. Not missing bets, and beyond that, I haven't dug too deeply into the numbers.
Natural regression was coming, I guess, right?
Yeah, it feels a little bit more severe than that. I mean, four runs allowed in five series straight starts. It's not exactly the easiest of schedules he's faced lately. But the Arizona game was a problem because that matchup grades pretty favorable for him, especially in a home game. What bothers me about this one is that you think Tampa, this is a slam dunk of a matchup, right?
You would think. I mean, let's not disparage Leo while he's not here, but yeah.
Doesn't grade as well as you think it does. And I think a lot of that has to do with the contact-oriented.
But if you've got Manaea in a league, I mean, you can make the case he's the pitching version of Didi Gregorius. Great great April, terrible May.
Okay.
Which one do you believe? Because we didn't rank Gregorius and Manaea as top 100 guys, you know, when April began.
Right.
And then we rushed to do it in April because they were so awesome. And now we're like, I mean, Didi's hitting home runs every day, Manaea with a no-hitter.
Right.
Now we're like, isn't this – their overall numbers are kind of where we thought they'd be. It's the path to getting them that bothers me.
Yeah, and I mean, in Manaea's case, I can't explain it as much as I can for Didi. Didi was going straight for pull power and trying to get the straight uppercut swing. If you watch him, that's what he was doing. Those are streaky players by nature, and his line hovered between 125 and I'd say 75 in the overall rankings. But I mean, I don't know, Eric, is it – like, better for us to just always keep him at 100 if that's the case?
I don't like seeing major swings like this, okay? I want consistency with my fantasy baseball options.
But is it a major swing to go from 75 to 125 in the overall?
That is not really a big deal. That is not a big deal. I hate overreacting to somebody who's doing so well when it looks like they could continue doing it. And don't tell me, well, you shouldn't have overreacted, because plenty of guys this year are still doing it. Scooter Gennett is still doing it, people. So, you know, and I don't think that's going to stop. And Gregorius could have a great June where he hits 10 home runs. That wouldn't shock me.
It's also very difficult to evaluate when a player has made a distinct change. When you can hang your head on the data that suggests it, like we did with Gennett, it's very difficult for us not to get excited about that. Manaya, I don't think there's been major, major, major changes from this year.
Well, speaking of changes, Hash Browns are brought to you by MeUndies. Change those underwear. Hey, take a moment to think about your undies. I know it's a little weird, but your first thought probably isn't that they're awesome, which is why I want to tell you about MeUndies, because they are awesome. They're comfy, awesome undies that'll make you feeling good from the moment you put them on. And I do put them on, and I take them off. What am I saying? And when you feel good, anything is possible. MeUndies are made with a material sustainably sourced from beechwood trees. Their naturally soft fiber makes a fabric that won't sag down or ride up. Trust me, once you put on a pair, you will get it. With MeUndies, you can get undies sent right to your door. No more hunting around for the perfect pair at a crowded store. Oh, I hate doing that. And eventually settling for something just good enough, which I do. MeUndies is so sure you'll love your first pair that if you're not happy, they'll do whatever they can to get you into the right pair. And if they can't, keep them and they'll refund you. So it really is risk-free to try the best underwear ever. Still not sure? Well, MeUndies has a deal for our listeners. First-time purchasers get 20% off their first pair of MeUndies and free shipping. That's 20% off plus free shipping and a guarantee that you and your MeUndies will be very happy together. Get your butt over to MeUndies.com and treat yourself to get your 20% off your first pair, free shipping, a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/FFB. That's MeUndies.com/FFB.
Oh, wow, what is that?
I know.
I recognize this music.
I think that's 2 out of 3 now.
Yeah, so what's happened? Like, what I miss?
You missed this and another show.
Huh. Anthony's come around, huh?
Figured I'd throw it a little old school, guys.
Yeah.
The lady with emphysema, I do hope she's feeling better. She's had emphysema for a really long time now. Right?
It's been a doctor or something. Years. Yeah.
It's a couple of years now. I feel like, and I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the Fantasy Focus either, but I feel like you shouldn't have emphysema for this many years. Get it fixed.
But then does she lose the fame of having a song named after her if she gets cured?
What is the song actually called?
I have no idea.
You don't tell me you don't really know.
I personally really don't know, but you're probably buying that from me. I'm sure Eric knows.
Isn't like the girl from Ipanema or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
Oh, right. We have an empanada situation, too.
The lady with the empanada.
Right. Empanada.
I like her over the disease
I like
lady.
My empanadas.
Yeah, sure. Sure.
All right, well, there's probably some questions here, right? It was a long weekend. Everybody's panicking about their teams. And you know, Tristan, you and I talk about this in past seasons, I believe, that Memorial Day is a natural weekend to look at your fantasy baseball teams and say, I could win this thing or I ain't winning anything. Do you do that or do you do that in the first week of April?
No, I definitely. On Memorial Day, if you're not looking, you're just lying.
I'm looking. I'm looking at my teams, and there's a couple where I'm looking at it and saying, I don't know how I can make this team. Like, I have a team with Goldschmidt. It's going nowhere. It's not all his fault, you know. It's also the fault of other players, but, like, that team is not going to win. I have another team that's in first, and I'm thinking, let's hold on to this lead. What can I do? And I don't look at it and say, well, you know, I'll just sit on it until something goes wrong. I mean, you always make your team better.
Yeah.
So.
By the way, the other this came up the other day that people are frustrated about Paul Goldschmidt, and I mentioned a reference on Memorial Day weekend. In 2004, Derek Jeter was batting .221, .281, .343 on Memorial Day weekend.
Does this feel the same, though? Because it doesn't to me.
It does a little bit, because Derek Jeter was regular Derek Jeter pretty much from that day forward.
And yeah, so basically, all you're saying is that you're trusting the history of Paul Goldschmidt.
No, it's another thing about the wackiness of baseball where, you know, one game Goldschmidt could hit a perfectly timely homer and that's all it takes, and then the next day he's the same old guy he always was. Or this could be a disastrous, well, we don't want to go there. I don't know.
It's not like he's getting that much better recently either, so at some point we're going to have to start looking at this as not a top 10 first baseman. I don't think we're there yet.
But in most cases, the stuff has already evened out. These are the absolute extreme examples, and I'm sure that I could easily find a guy who was terrible on the morning of May 29th.
Oh, yeah, it happened.
Did not recover.
Well, I mean, I'll never forget the Mike Lowell year because I think I lost a league because of that. Now, that was like 100 years ago. But you remember that year. Was that his first year in Boston or last year in Florida? Whatever it was. He was a good player, and then all of a sudden he wasn't.
Oh, which one was it? Yeah.
Well, you can easily see which
one. The one I remember was the Adam Dunn 2011.
Yeah, some remember guys, that one? I just can't explain this. Like,
on the morning of May 29th, he was batting 184, 322, 337, Adam Dunn was. And you remember what he finished with.
Yeah.
He finished with, let's not get him qualified for the batting title, so he has the lowest batting average ever.
I hate this inconsistency. I want consistency more than anything else. Mm-hmm. And if I know a guy's just going to be bad, then I'll move on. But, like, Manaea, Gregorius, Rhys Hoskins. What an awful May. And it got worse last night in L.A., where he actually fouled a ball off his lip.
Yep.
Which is really hard to do. And, you know, maybe he plays today or tomorrow, but, I mean, he has had a terrible May, other than taking walks. Pitchers have figured it out. Mm-hmm. Now he's got to figure them out. Anyway, I still buy on Goldschmidt. But, like, if you told me Goldschmidt, well, not Goldschmidt versus Hoskins, because they're both playing poorly right now, but, like, I would still take Goldschmidt over Hoskins. But I'm as we're in June this week, Tristan, I'm starting to consider Goldschmidt out of my top 30. I think we have to.
That's why I mentioned the name. I mean, the conversation absolutely has got to be had.
Give me Jose Abreu now. At least I know what I'm getting.
Yeah.
And it's not like Goldschmidt's going to hit 380 from here on out with a homer every week either. He's not. He's going to do what we expected for the season.
Right. It's going to be projected in the remaining games, and we're looking at 53 out of 162. So it's 80. No. It would be 109. 109 left. I will go down with the Paul Goldschmidt ship just because it's what I wrote a week ago, and I still think that what I explained is what's going on with him. But he is the outlier here that explains why most of this other stuff has evened out. If you're not looking at your standings and thinking that number is pretty legit, then you're too late.
The best way to move up in your standings is to invest in a guy like Goldschmidt. So I say if you've got him in your league, you keep him.
Unless, of course, he is fetching a top 30 player price tag in trade.
How would he? I can't imagine. Even in expert league, he wouldn't anymore. Even in NLA or tout, he would not fetch a top 30 guy now.
What do you think he would fetch in those leagues?
He would fetch somebody a lot worse or a pitcher. You can't trade him for a hitter.
You're in labor NL. I'm curious what he would fetch in that league.
I don't know. I mean, I don't have him, but like. Like, my outfield is really disappointing in that league. It's why I can't win. Margot, Domingo Santana, Rhys Hoskins, Jay Bruce. I mean, I can't trade any of them for gold. Nobody would do that. So it would have to be better than that. But would I trade two of them for Goldschmidt? I guess.
I don't think I'm looking at my Tout Wars team for the same example, and I don't think I have a single player that Paul Goldschmidt's would trade for him. The only guy I have here who I would even hesitate to trade for Paul Goldschmidt is Tommy Pham.
I don't think I would do that anymore, which means I need to move Goldschmidt out of my top 40 or 50.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, and actually, as a matter of fact,
like
I know
Daniel
that
Murphy. It'd have to be a guy who's hurt or has other question marks surrounding him. Like, would you trade Alex Reyes? Like, I would trade Alex Reyes for Goldschmidt.
Right, but I don't think that's.
But I'm not sure I would after
this
week. Like, you know, like if he goes out and throws out, you know, 8 innings of shutout ball with 14 strikeouts.
Right. I'll tell you this. I know that the Goldschmidt team, you know, Goldschmidt's manager in Tout Wars listens to the show, and I'll tell you right now that Pham is the only guy I'd even hesitate to trade straight up for him, which means, we probably should be moving him down in our rankings.
All right, Kyle, let's get to a couple questions here before we sing the happy birthday song.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got there. Well, you mentioned Daniel Murphy as a potential Goldschmidt option there. Jeremy wants to know what you expect once he gets activated in the near future. He wants to know if he can expect the nice four-category production that he's come to know and love since he joined Washington.
I really don't see why not. I mean, I assume at this point that he's healthy. He's hitting well on his rehab assignment. You know, he's a guy who can win a batting title, some modest power, great plate discipline. I assume that Washington will be careful with him the final 4 months. There's no reason not to. They really ought to win this division by 8 to 10 games. And they've got Defoe to play, so I'm not sure why they would risk playing him when his knee is even a little least bit sore. So he's going to be annoying in an Ohtani type of way, where you don't know if you can count on him for the week. But I think when he plays, the numbers. I think he hits 300 with, I don't know. I mean, does he hit? He's not going to hit 20 home runs this season, but he probably could if he really wanted to.
It'd be tough based on the time remaining.
Not going to hit 5 a month,
right?
So he wasn't hitting 5 a month when he was healthy.
to your point on the rehab stint, he's got a single, a double, a homer, and no strikeouts in his 8 at-bats, but it's 2 games.
Yeah, you don't really know.
No, but I mean, like, at least it's not, you know, oh, he's 0 for 8 with 7 strikeouts, which is not Daniel Murphy.
Top 100 player, because the batting average safety, but in a way, yeah. It's like Michael Brantley. I don't know when it's going to stop.
Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that name, because that's exactly what came
to mind. It's not going to stop hitting. I think he'll hit when he's active. But, like, if you told me that Brantley went on the DL today and I didn't even know he was hurt, I would be like, okay. It wouldn't surprise me. If you told Murphy is delayed 2 weeks because of the knee, I wouldn't be surprised by that either. So rostering players like this is risky, but they should hit when they're fine.
But Brantley's year where he had the injury that extended this deep into the season, he was not quite his normal self. That's the lone hesitation I have with Daniel Murphy, is what if he is the 90% of his usual self once healthy?
All right.
Alrighty, Sean wants to know, what's your biggest takeaway from the first third of the season, either from a strategic standpoint or just a single player at this point other than Goldschmidt that you've changed your opinion on?
What's been the major theme of the first third of the season? I mean, obviously Shohei Ohtani is unbelievable. Okay, he's a great hitter, a great pitcher. We'd like to see more of both. Mookie Betts' ascension to Trout territory again has been fantastic to watch. Kershaw, disappointing. Goldschmidt, disappointing. I mean, the Braves offense has been so much fun to watch. Ozzie Albies is great. Nick Markakis, I hope I'm not wrong, but I think he kind of keeps this going all year for 6 months. Maybe not the power, but the hits, that's a 200-hit guy. I think those are the main stories for me. And in terms of a theme, I mean, it bothers me that over the weekend, MLB admitted that the baseballs are different when we knew it for 2 years, and that means they could change them back, and the home runs will stop. Oh, yeah. I don't think they will. Home run pace is down, actually, I saw. That's good news, I think, because that was just too many home runs.
Right.
But I don't know, what's your overall, what are your top two or three themes of the season? I mean, Ohtani has to be there.
Ohtani's part of a larger theme, whereas changing roles in baseball.
All right, yeah, Tampa Bay starters. Sure.
Yeah, and I think those do fall into the same discussion because teams are now looking very much towards matchups, which is what we do in fantasy and we have for years. It's much more so in the real game, and that has an influence on fantasy, especially for the wins with the Rays situation. But the two that also stand out for me are declining workloads of starting pitchers. They're continuing to fall off a cliff. And that is an issue for things like the win category. I've been telling people this, and I wish they would do this. I think the official score should hand out every win from now on.
And the rookie pitchers, the not
the
knowing.
Pitchers, definitely, definitely, definitely. The other two is steals are also way down.
Well, of course. But we knew that was going to happen. Nobody wants to run. Nobody's going to steal 50.
But
Trey
Turner's
not going to do it. D. Gordon's not going to do it. Nobody's going to. When's the last time nobody stole 50 in a year? Hamilton can't do it. He's never on base.
Well, I'm sure it's probably in a shortened year they would have had it. But I know in a full year, it's probably been a long time. The ability to fill that category, that strategy is becoming much more important. The ability to fill your wins category is becoming much more important. And saves. I mean, Eric, your team is one of those that does not have a clear closer, and they're doing the right thing. And
I think
has
they do.
An influence.
I think Neris is the clear closer. I think Sir Anthony Dominguez just gets called on for the biggest outs. And to get to the ninth inning. I don't think Sir Anthony Dominguez gets more than 10 saves.
I don't either, but I mean, if we're going to trust in Hector Neris, do you think he gets 20 more saves? Because I don't.
I think it's probably below that.
So do
I. But, like, I don't know if anybody on Tampa gets 10 saves now. You know, any Angels. I think...
The White Sox have bounced back and forth. The Angels have bounced back and forth. I mean, there's a countless number of teams
Astros,
that have done this.
You know, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah. No? Okay.
Royals, if they trade Kelvin Herrera, that's going to be another one that bounces back and forth. There's a lot of teams like this.
All right, what else?
For the record, nobody stole 50 bases in 2012. Mike Trout led the league with 49.
Okay. Wow.
So there you go. We've got one more question here from A-Train. Wants to know if Clayton Kershaw comes back and makes a good start or two and looks like the Kershaw we know. Is it time to move on from him in a dynasty league and look for near peak value?
I'm glad he said that, because I think it is. Because I think in next year's rankings, we cannot put Clayton Kershaw number one. And I didn't have him number one this year. I had Scherzer over him, but I'm not even sure now. This is a 30-year-old pitcher with 3 consecutive seasons on the disabled list. And if you told me that he pitches great on Thursday and then he goes back on the DL next week, that wouldn't surprise me one bit. The numbers are going to be great when he's out there, but it is time in a dynasty to not give him away for Eugenio Suarez, but, I mean, to see what you can get. Not
right.
For Verlander, But Kershaw for Alex Reyes in another piece makes sense, right? Get younger.
I'd want to know what the other piece was, but yeah, you should be certainly fishing for it.
Albies and Alex Reyes for Kershaw.
You got to take that.
Okay, but that we wouldn't have said that in March. Nobody would have said that in March. Kershaw is still like
the uncertainty of Reyes' role.
Yeah. Unbelievable talent.
By the way, he's made a DL stint in 4 of his past 5 years.
Yeah.
So it's not just this.
But he's still been
three.
A top 10 pitcher every year, right? Because the numbers are just so much better than everybody else for when he pitches. He still had 200 strikeouts last year and 18 wins.
And he might well still be a top 10 pitcher at the end of this year, too. But those missed games do now matter.
I'm concerned.
I'd agree with you. I mean, if he throws 3 straight gems here, I think it's going to be relatively easy to get a hefty return, including a return that's going to help you this season. And I'll tell you, if you are a team that is not in competition this year and is looking to the future, perfect time to strike.
Yeah, actually is. And we say this a lot, but if you're going to if you're thinking of trading Kershaw or Alex Reyes for that matter, do it before they pitch this week. Everything changes with one outing. It shouldn't. It doesn't to me and Tristan, but the value of the player changes as soon as they perform. Yes, right?
I really can't. You're right. Reyes's value might be higher this minute, right now, than it is after that start. Yeah.
Even if he pitches well, it depends what he does. If he Chatwoods people, then that changes everything. If he only goes 4 innings, that changes it. Kershaw, same thing.
If he goes 5 one-hit innings and he strikes out 10 batters, Alex Reyes does, then yes, at the end of that outing, that's going to be
his value too.
But
you can acquire Alex Reyes today from that manager that you might not be able to in 2 days.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we don't know. His value will change that much. It doesn't with hitters, but it always does with starting pitchers. Oh, look at this. You know, I always remember this because I didn't know you back then, but this is the day Mike Schmidt retired in San Diego with tears.
Yep.
This is the day of the Roy Halladay.
John got cut too.
Who?
Tommy John also got cut by the Yankees that day, same day as Mike Schmidt.
All right, which one do you think is a little bit more important there?
I know.
The Halladay perfect game happened today.
Great day in Phillies history.
Big day and in Tristan history. So now let's have everybody together and let's sing a song.
Happy! Happy birthday to you.
Are you happy? Happy!
Happy!
Darkness!
Birthday!
I'm so glad this podcast was moved to Tuesday this week.
Oh yeah. My goodness!
Otherwise, we would have had to do this on Monday, and we couldn't because there was no show on Monday.
Now I'm bright red and embarrassed.
I don't think you are.
Yeah.
So we're not playing the whole song.
Also, I'm looking at what Kyle posted on here, so you know.
What do you post?
Scooter.
Yeah. Hash Brown from researcher Kyle here. He was named or his nickname came after a Muppet baby. Is he by default then a monster in your guys' rankings?
You know, he's got a point there. He was named after the Scooter Muppet Baby.
He nicknamed himself. He liked the Muppet more than he
liked name. His name is something else.
Ryan Joseph.
Yes, RJ. I remember that.
Should know. I have him on a team where that's what his name is, Ryan Jeanette.
That's funny. I wouldn't recognize him in the game if he was Ryan Jeanette.
But you name yourself? That's a little weird.
Yeah, you can't come up with your own nickname.
No,
that's
the
rule.
But he was.
Well,
I mean,
you
he
did?
Was, he was in.
No, I didn't. Muppet. You named me that.
I name you Turkey Leg.
Yeah,
you're
you
a
did.
Monster, Kyle. And I don't have any monster rankings, but I don't know if I'd want to put you on them.
I didn't ask if I was there. I'm asking if Scooter the Muppet Baby's up there.
Scooter the Muppet Baby.
But I feel like now we're wasting time. Thank you all for listening to our fine show. And guess what? There's another one in 48 hours. What
Yay!
Could be better than that, we think? Thursday.
47.
That's the best part of the day.
Is that the last day of the month? Yes, we will end May on a high note. With another podcast on Thursday morning.
With a great Alex Reyes effort. It's not going to be a down note where he pitched poorly. There we go.
We will have so much to discuss. So please, thank you so much for listening to our show. We'll be back in 2 days. Enjoy your baseball for the next 2 days. For everybody here, and Tristan, happy birthday to you. Have an awesome day.
Everything is awesome.
Darkness.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.